Kimmelin said.
It could be life-threatening,
Jorgen insisted. Hey, FM said. You and Rig were the ones who said we should stick with the same word when we trained the rest of the slugs for simplicity's sake.
We're still working with them,
Jorgen said.
We only had a short time with them before you arrived. But so far, they will all go H-O-M-E when they're asked, and most of them know each other's names, and will get as close to each other as they feasibly can when they're asked. Some of them will also take us out a couple of kilometers if we tell them to J-U-M-P.
I don't know what that means either, I said. I don't think the pins know how to spell.
It's the word for leaping up in the air,
FM said.
Also, the second half of hyperjump, which they don't seem to recognize as a command, thank goodness. They're all a little better at only doing that command when we say their names first.
Probably because they'd rather go H-O-M-E than hop somewhere random, Kimmelin said.
Wouldn't we all?
Are those the only commands they answer to? I asked. The humans were freely giving up the details on how to use their hyperdrives, but I wasn't going to point this out to them.
If you want to do anything else, FM said, you need a cytonic. Jorgen can ask the slugs to hyperjump anywhere he can see, or anywhere he can visualize that the slugs can recognize. The rest of us are limited to verbal commands, which we have to drill beforehand. The slugs pick it up pretty quickly, and they understand some basic abstract concepts like danger. We're working on a bonding program. That's why we keep them with us in slings. Though engineering is working on a backpack as well. The idea is that even if the pilot can't give a command, the slugs are attached enough to their pilot partners that they want to pull us out of danger and are familiar enough with us to understand what might be helpful and what won't.
That seems like a lot to ask of a slug.
Slug!
Gil trilled softly.
It is, FM said. But they're doing great at it, aren't you, Gil?
Gil!
Kimmelin's slug said, and immediately appeared on top of the dash in front of FM, extending itself up to peer at Gil in FM's sling.
Good girl, Happy,
FM said, reaching into her pocket and pulling out a tin of a slimy-looking substance. The Tanix eagerly ate it off her finger, despite Gil's best efforts to nudge its way in and take some.
That's the other command they know,
Jorgen said.
They can recognize each other's names and go find each other, regardless of distance. So even if Alanik didn't want to go to Detritus to get Rig...
Are we learning how useless we are without the engineers again? Sadie asked, walking up behind us with the others.
I thought we knew that already. You'd think,
T-Stall, or Catnip, said.
But it turns out there is no limit to the number of times we have to learn obvious things. Speak for yourself,
the other one said.
I knew it already. I was simply waiting for the rest of you to catch up.
Arturo followed behind them with Ned. He didn't acknowledge me at all, as if our conversation had never happened. It was entirely reasonable for him not to trust me, but it still bothered me that he didn't, even though he was justified, smart even, in thinking I might betray them.
Does anyone else feel heavier here?
Ned asked. Yes, I said. Our planets have a slight gravitational difference. I noticed that on Detritus. I don't think it's enough of a difference to matter.
It matters to my quads,
Ned said.
I feel like I've been doing laps around the orchard at Alta.
He blinked at me.
You probably don't have orchards, since you live on trees.
We do, actually, I said. We graft smaller trees into the branches of the large ones. They also grow naturally in places where the bark has disintegrated into debris. FM handed Kimmelin's Tanix back to her.
I was hoping looking at the tech might spark something, since I've spent a lot of time listening to Rig talk about this stuff. But no, still don't know enough to be useful.
She looked over at Jorgen.
It's possible that Command doesn't know Rig was in on us leaving, though. I don't want to get him in trouble. We could try to bring him out and then return him without anyone knowing,
Jorgen said again.
We might need Alanik's help for that, though. If we use the H-O-M-E position to hyperjump in, that will be obvious. My mom might even have people staking it out, waiting for us.
I want to go, FM says. I can explain the situation to Rig.
Any of us could explain the situation to Rig,
Ned said. Yes, FM said slowly. But he trusts me.
He trusts all of us, doesn't he?
Ned said.
Except maybe Alanik. No offense, Alanik.
Why would I take offense to that? I asked. It's factual.
See?
Ned said.
I knew I liked you.
Arturo gave Ned a look I couldn't quite read.
Alanik could go get Rig,
Jorgen said.
And FM could go with her to explain the situation. Is that all right with you, Alanik?
Was I willing to take someone with me when I walked onto a platform full of people who now probably considered me a criminal? Yes, of course, I said.
I can jump straight to Rig on my own, though,
FM said.
Gil is really good at finding his slug. I still want you to take Alanik with you,
Jorgen said.
We think Gil will be able to get back easily, but I don't want you stranded on Detritus, facing court-martial. Wait,
Ned said.
Why is Gil really good at finding Rig's slug?
Because we've drilled them so many times, FM said. She looked a little pink and sounded defensive.
Okay,
Ned said.
But we've practiced with all the slugs. We've practiced so many times that I think maybe I could find these slugs in the nowhere. You couldn't,
Jorgen said.
Leave it, Ned, Arturo said. But I'm just saying.
I hear what you're saying, FM said, too loudly. Everyone stared at her. She sighed. Our slugs are really good at finding each other because Rig and I are dating. And we use the slugs to visit each other so we don't have to deal with awkward questions because we weren't ready to tell everyone. There. Now you know.
Oh,
Ned said. He always seemed to have something to say about everything, but now he seemed abashed. Based on the reactions of the group, I guessed that Jorgen and Kimmelin already knew, and T-Stall and Catnip didn't care. Are mate pairs taboo in your culture? I asked. You all seem very embarrassed to talk about them.
Not taboo, FM said, but personal.
She looked at me.
Do the Erdale always speak openly about these things?
Fairly openly, I said. It's definitely nothing to be embarrassed about. It can depend on your family culture, but most families are thrilled by mate pairings because they welcome children.
None of us are thinking about children,
Jorgen said quickly.
Can you imagine? FM said.
I didn't understand. Because you're at war? You were all born during the war, weren't you? Unless I drastically misunderstood human aging patterns, they would have had to be.
Because we're too young, FM said, and we're pilots on the front lines. Not a life conducive to raising kids. A lot of our parents were pilots, but most of us had at least one parent who wasn't flying.
Wait, I said, you're raised by your parents? The humans all looked at me like this was a very stupid question.
Yes,
Kimmelin said.
Who were you raised by?
My grandparents, I said. We're encouraged to find a mate pair young, so we can have children while our parents are still young and healthy enough to raise the children. Parents have to work to support their families. They don't have time or energy for childcare. Besides, we only have two of them, where there are at least four grandparents involved. So the odds of one of them being able to care for the children is so much higher than with parents. Huh, Sadie said.
I guess that does make sense when you put it that way.
I was trying to picture how human parents must handle having babies, while, to use FM's example, still of age to fly in the Air Force. That sounded like a terrible system.
Okay.
Jorgen said.
I think the lesson here is that none of us want to talk about relationships or plan to have children in the near future, except maybe Alanik. I'm not going to have a child, I said. I'm not in a mate pair. But it doesn't bother me to say so. It's not shameful in my culture, either way.
Well, I feel shameful, Ned said. Everyone is coupled up but me. FM has a boyfriend, and Arturo is basically engaged. I am not, Arturo said. And Jorgen and Spence, shut up, Ned, Jorgen said. Kimmelin, do you have a boyfriend?
Kimmelin looked suddenly uncomfortable. No.
But seriously, it's bad enough that I have to hang around while Arturo and Bryn are making kissy faces at each other. You won't have to do that anymore, trust me, Arturo said. What?
Ned said.
Why? Because we broke up.
Now everyone stared at Arturo. He usually had a confident air about him, but now he withered a bit. Okay. Humans definitely got unreasonably embarrassed about relationships. It was amazing their species managed to survive.
Seriously?
Ned asked. He seemed much more concerned now.
When did that happen? A few days ago. She wrote me a letter. But I thought we established that none of us wanted to talk about relationships. Can we please change the subject? Stars, please,
Jorgen said. The question is, FM said, do we think Rig's help with the platform will be beneficial enough that we're willing to ask him to risk a military trial with the rest of us?
If it was a military trial, we'd be cleared,
Jorgen said,
because Cobb is our military leader and he told us to go. It would have to be a civil trial for us to be convicted, and they can't try us civilly because all we did was disobey orders, which isn't a violation of civilian law.
And we stole starships, Kimmelin reminded him.
Which are military property, Jorgen said. Also should be tried by the DDF. No defection, no grand larceny.
Everyone looked skeptical, including Jorgen. But if it helped him feel better, I didn't see any harm in leaving him to his faulty logic.
You disobeyed your mother,
Ned said.
What do you think she's going to do to you for that? I don't know,
Jorgen said.
But at least the rest of you are off the hook there.
I'd like my ship, I said. Otherwise, we'll have one fewer pilot in the air. If we brought it here with Rig, could he finish reassembling it? After my last experience in a human vessel, I'd take my own ship back as long as it flew. I bet he'd do it, FM said. He felt really bad that he dismantled it and then you needed it.
I think the biggest question, Arturo said, is what are our other options?
Everyone was quiet.
Okay,
Jorgen said.
The rest of us will stay here and see if we can find a place where the platform is built to interface with the Tanix.
Interface with them? I asked. If this platform has hypercom or hyperdrive technology, it will probably have Tanix boxes, FM said. Like the one in the broken superiority ship.
We'll look for the boxes while you're gone,
Jorgen said,
and then Rig can help us figure it out when he gets here.
I hoped we wouldn't be gone long enough for them to do much searching. Going to get Rig and my ship should be an in-and-out kind of mission. But these things rarely worked out that simply. All right, I said. Are we ready? FM scritched Gil on the head.
Let me take us, she said. Gil needs the practice.
I was a bit leery of jetting around the universe at the whims of a slug, but the human seemed certain this would work. Besides, I'd wanted to learn the secrets to hyperdrive technology. This was my chance to see one in action. Okay, I said. FM stood beside me and put a hand on my shoulder.
Scud, I hope he's not in the shower or something, she said. Or in a meeting with command,
Jorgen said.
Or that. Gil, FM said. Take me to Drape.
Drape,
the slug trilled cheerfully. It took all my concentration not to fight the pull of the negative realm as I was sucked into it by a force completely out of my control.
Chapter 14. I was unprepared for how it would feel to hover in the negative realm while the eyes fixed their penetrating stares elsewhere. Normally, I had their full attention, but this time I was beneath their notice. It was a relief to hide, but it also felt a little insulting. We emerged in a hallway of the human's platform, immediately in front of Rig, who screamed. "Scud!" he shouted. "That is terrifying when I'm not expecting it." "Shh," FM said, and she grabbed him by the arm and pulled him into the nearest room. I took a look up and down the empty hall and then followed them, into a storage closet from the look of it. There didn't appear to be any alternate exits, but I supposed we could hyperjump out if we needed to.
"I thought you said you do that a lot," I whispered at FM. "I didn't expect him to be so loud."
"Usually we arrange it beforehand," Rig said. "Also, you told her we do that a lot?"
"It was Ned's fault," FM said.
Okay, Rig said. "Well, hi. You should know there's a warrant out for your immediate arrest. I could be held in contempt simply for talking to you."
I'd thought Jorgen's justification sounded like a stretch. FM gripped Rig's arm, and they stood close together. And I stood, unfortunately, close to them, because there wasn't a lot of room between the shelves of packaged algae strips, it looked like. We must be near their kitchen facilities.
"We need your help on Redon," FM said.
"We found something. A platform that used to move around the planet, but now is in disrepair. It seems similar to the ones we have here, but we don't really know what we're looking at, or how to use it."
"So you decided to pop into the middle of the hallway? In a place where you're wanted for desertion?"
"Is it only desertion?" FM asked. "We were worried they'd charge us with defection."
"Also grand larceny," I said, "for stealing 8 starships."
9, FM said, "including yours."
"I'm not sure they've decided what they're going to officially charge you with, but it seems like a problem for you to get arrested for any of it."
This was all beside the point. "Are you willing to come to Redon to help us with the platform?" I asked. Rig blinked at me.
"Am I willing to
come with us to look at the platform?" FM said. "If no one sees us leave, you might be able to come back without anyone knowing you were helping us." "Except I'd also like to take my ship," I reminded her.
"Right," FM said. "Well, you could tell them we kidnapped you or something."
"And add that to our list of crimes," I added. Rig stared at us with wide eyes.
"I'll help you. But you should know there's a lot going on here, too. Cobb and Jeshua met with some representatives from the Superiority."
That was right. Cobb gave that as his reason for not wanting us to return to Detritus with the Independence flight. "Have they returned?" I asked. Rig nodded.
"It was a quick meeting. They used a hyperdrive to meet at a ship right outside the shield and exchange terms. Then they came back and they've been discussing what they want to do. I think they might be talking over the hypercom to the Superiority people now."
"Hold on," I said, reaching into the negative realm, searching for nearby voices.
"Understand your concerns," said a voice I didn't recognize. "Danger to themselves and others. Learn proper safety measures to prevent disaster. Send your cytonics to us for training."
"They're asking your leaders to send your cytonics to the Superiority," I said. "They've tried to get us to do the same thing on Redon, first by asking and then by threatening us. I think Quillan believes he'll have proven himself if he delivers me personally, and that if he does, the Superiority will leave him and the other cytonics alone."
"Jorgen's parents aren't considering that, are they?" FM asked Rig. "Turning their own son over to the Superiority?"
"My own parents argued I might be better off being trained by the Superiority," I said. "You'd be surprised what people will believe."
"Is it possible that would be better?" Rig asked. We're in the dark when it comes to cytonic potential. You can obviously do a lot more than Jorgen can, and the superiority cytonics might know even more.
They do, I said, but they aren't going to help you, no matter what they say.
I can see the Assembly considering it, though, FM said. Believing that trading a couple of lives to end the war would be an acceptable sacrifice, risking a few to save so many. That's what we all signed up for, isn't it? They might see it as no worse than letting their son join the DDF, and the potential for peace.
I held my breath. I'd told them over and over what I thought about making peace with the superiority. They already knew what I had to say. As I listened, I picked out another voice over the hypercom. Jeshua Waite.
Assurances that no harm will come to them.
Valuable, the alien voice said. Never be so aggressive as to...
Aggressive enough to exterminate us.
Work with us. You have nothing to fear. Turn over your hyperdrives and...
The superiority representatives say they won't hurt the cytonics, I said, which might be true, but sending them away was still a terrible idea.
And Cobb was right. They want you to turn over the Tanix, too.
We can't do that, FM said. Right?
Right?
Drape said, and Rig put a hand on his spines.
They're trying to imprison you here, I said. It's what they do. Keep you isolated on your planet unless you play by their rules.
That's what they've always done to us, Rig said, ever since our flotilla crashed here.
But this time we have the power to leave, FM said. We can't give that up without risking that they'll go back to trying to exterminate us. The shield stops them for now.
But not forever, Rig said. That's true.
And we're not giving up the Tanix, FM said, no matter what.
Negotiate. We would, of course, need assurances that if we are to cooperate...
Human or Erdale, politicians were all the same. It sounds like they're thinking about it.
I meant us, FM said. We aren't giving them up. The politicians will have to come to Redon and take them from us.
I smiled. I'd climb that tree with you.
I imagine Cobb will, too, Rig said. He can't be in favor of this.
Your generous offer,
another voice said over the hypercom. Admiral Cobb, I thought.
Need time to collect the Tanix. Transport them to you and continue our negotiations.
I said, it sounds like he is also considering it.
Seriously?
Rig said. FM shook her head.
We should get more of the Tanix out while we still can.
We can't take them if we aren't ordered to, Rig said.
We'd need to talk to Cobb.
Cobb says he's in favor of sending them to the superiority, FM said. If that's true, he won't help.
He might be saying that for optics,
Rig said.
Maybe he'd be glad to have an opportunity to send them away so they can't be turned over.
He can only do that so many times, I said, before your politicians will catch on.
That's true, FM said. Maybe we should take them ourselves, without asking.
Rig looked at FM in alarm, but he didn't argue with her. Where would we find them? I asked.
The ones that can hyperjump are all over the platform, Rig said. We have most of them partnered with pilots. Some of the hypercom and mindblade slugs are kept in engineering, but it's crawling with people right now.
So we wouldn't be able to pull them all out without alerting people to our presence. I think we should get my ship and get out of here as soon as possible. Is it capable of flight?
Not right now,
Rig said.
I'm sorry, I haven't had time to.
Can you fix it on Redon? I asked. If not, we'd need to take another human ship. When it was time for us to make our move, I wanted all the Independence pilots in the air with us.
Yes, Rig said. Given a few hours, I could put it together again.
What else is the superiority saying?
FM asked. I'd been distracted from the transmission, but I focused on it again.
Meeting to assure you of our intentions. Do what is best for your species and the intergalactic interests.
They're setting up another meeting, I said. Probably to turn over Tanix, I'm guessing.
What about Gran-Gran?
Rig asked. Who? I said.
Becca Nightshade, Spensa's grandmother. If the Superiority is really asking them to turn over the Cytonix, she might be in danger.
Would you like me to contact her? I asked.
We should at least warn her, FM said. Maybe we should take her with us.
I paused, reaching toward the planet below. Into the planet, beneath the surface, through the underground caverns where the humans lived. A voice reached out to meet me.
Alanik,
it said. So she'd heard of me. I spent so long unconscious on this platform, it made sense. Yes, I said. Your government is considering a deal to turn their Cytonix over to the Superiority. Do you need us to rescue you? What followed wasn't words exactly, but a strong sense of reluctance.
Detritus is not our home,
Gran-Gran said.
But these are my people. I won't abandon them.
Jorgen left to help me, so I felt the need to defend him. Jorgen didn't abandon them, I said. He's gone for help. You could come with us. I didn't know Gran-Gran, but I wasn't going to abandon an old woman to be given over to the Superiority. Besides, we could use another Cytonic. The more we had on our side, the more we evened the playing field with Unity.
They are coming for you,
Gran-Gran said.
You need to go.
Who? I asked. Quillan and the other Urdale Cytonics couldn't hyperjump, but the Superiority Cytonics could. Did they know we were here?
Go, Gran-Gran
said.
A warrior fights. She does not yield, and she does not abandon her people.
I nodded. She wants to stay here, I said. She knows they might try to use her as a bargaining chip, but she won't abandon Detritus.
Is that a good idea?
FM asked.
If it's Gran-Gran's idea, you won't talk her out of it,
Rig said. I can respect her decision, I said, but she says they're coming for us. I don't know who, but we need to go. I still think we should try to get more of the slugs out before we go, FM said. There are dozens of them here with the other pilots.
The entire military isn't going to desert, Rig said. We'd only put ourselves in danger trying to convince them.
Jorgen can get them to answer him, right? I asked. What if I called them to come to me? Do you think they'd do it?
Depends, Rig said. They might be attached enough to their pilots to stay. They'd be more likely to come if you promised them something like caviar.
I have a little, FM said. Not enough to feed them all. If you promise them caviar and we don't deliver, that's bad for their training. But not as bad as being given to the Superiority. I grabbed a large box of algae strips on the shelf. We could bring these. The people on Wandering Leaf are going to be getting hungry, so we should probably bring some for them anyway.
Good idea,
Rig said, and he picked up a jug of white substance.
Custard, FM said. Kimmelin will be happy.
If I'm going to try to call the slugs, it'll draw attention, I said. We should do it from the ship, so we can leave immediately afterward. Rig looked at FM, as if to ask if we were actually doing this.
I think you should, FM said. I don't feel good about leaving them here, even with their pilots, when we don't know if the other flights will defend them.
They probably won't, Rig said. The Assembly has come down pretty hard on you guys for what you did, and Cobb has had to go along with it.
All right, I said. I can jump us to my ship in the landing bay. I pulled us through the negative realm beneath those strange, distracted eyes. We were only going a short distance, but space didn't work the same in there. If we were dealing in relative distances, We should have spent a much shorter time in the negative realm compared to when we jumped from Redawn. And yet we hung there for a moment and then emerged out the other side in the large hangar next to my disassembled ship. Through a large skylight, I could see the platforms above and the snatches of sparkling shield that encased the planet. "You're sure you can make it fly again?" I asked Rig quietly.
"It'll take me a bit," Rig said. "But yes, I can."
"It's got a better chance of working than the one you left with last time," FM added.
"Last time?"
Gil trilled, and FM shushed him.
"Wait, what happened to that one?"
Rig whispered.
"They're here somewhere,"
a voice said from the edge of the landing bay.
"Find them."
FM and Rig huddled closer together under the wing, the containers of food tucked up by their knees.
"That's Cobb,"
Rig whispered. And so it was. Had Spensa's grandmother alerted him? She hadn't wanted to abandon her people, but she'd sounded like she wanted us to keep fighting. No, it was probably the superiority. One of their cytonics might have warned them of our arrival and then noticed us hyperjumping to the landing pad.
"Alanik," FM whispered.
"The slugs."
"We might be able to count on Cobb to cover for us for a moment, but not for long. Whatever Cytonic was watching would be able to feel me calling for the slugs. But if I hyperjumped out fast enough, they wouldn't be able to stop me." I gave FM a sharp nod, pressed my back to the lower part of my fuselage, and reached out across the base. There were a lot of those tiny mines, dozens at least. As I reached toward them, they turned to me as if curious. I could work with that. I wasn't sure how much language the slugs understood, but here in the negative realm, all communication was reduced to thoughts, which anyone could understand. Still, I didn't want to get too complicated. "Friend," I sent to them. They obviously understood that concept, given how attached they were to each other and to their pilots. And this was a concept every living being responded to. Food. I could feel them answering me, some of them hungrier than others, all of them searching for a social connection, like it was the thing they longed for most. These things had relationships with each other long before the humans captured them, I realized. But they saw the humans, not as kidnappers, but as a joyous addition to their family. Many of them didn't want to leave. Footsteps approached as Cobb's people spread out across the hangar. It wasn't going to take them long to find us here. I didn't have much time. "More family," I told them, sending them images of Rig and FM and Jorgen. That intrigued them. They knew and liked all three of them and wanted to see them again. More boots clicking on the metal surface of the platform, movement over the edge of the wing, and then,
"We have to go,"
Rig whispered.
"Come,"
I called to the Tanix. And then Cobb appeared, several paces away, his eyes fixed on us under the wing. And half a dozen Tanix popped into existence at our feet. FM and Rig reached forward, grabbing the slugs, while Cobb's jaw dropped.
"They're here,"
he shouted. No, not covering for us. The opposite of that. We probably should have expected that, given that we were stealing his military's hyperdrives without permission. More slugs appeared, maybe as many as a dozen now. Cobb strode toward us, like he was about to yank us out from beneath the wing. It might be for show, but he hadn't had to alert them to our presence, had he? I wasn't going to stay here and find out. I reached into the negative realm, toward Wandering Leaf and the rest of the humans. With the ship to my back and my shoulder pressed against FM, I pulled. And the landing bay disappeared. Chapter 15. We emerged from the negative realm in the hangar on Wandering Leaf, which was empty of both humans and Erdale.
"That never gets less terrifying," Rig said.
"And disorienting," FM says. "And we don't even see the creepy eyes."
"Be glad for that," I said. I reached out again, searching for Jorgen's mind. I found him and the Tanix belonging to the other flight members. They hadn't gone far.
Why did Cobb come after us like that? FM asked. He didn't even try to talk to us. Maybe Jeshua is watching him too closely?
Maybe, Riggs said. Cobb played along with everything they said after you left. If I hadn't been there when he gave you the order to go, I never would have thought he'd done it.
Done it, one of the slugs said.
Cobb was far away now, and whatever superiority Cytonic had been tracking us either couldn't or didn't follow. That felt more ominous than anything.
At least we saved these guys, FM said, cuddling the slugs. Though I don't imagine their pilots are happy with us.
Happy,
one of the slugs trilled, and then several of them disappeared. We all climbed out from beneath the wing, FM and Rig hauling the case of algae and the jug of custard with them. This way, I said, leading FM and Rig toward the others. We found them several sections down from the hangar, gathered around an arched open doorway. Most of the flight sat outside with two crates open in front of them. Jorgen was inside, while Arturo leaned in the doorframe, watching the others dubiously.
Rig!
Kimmelin said, waving furiously. Several of the new slugs were gathered around her and Happy.
Hey, everybody, Rig said.
Look,
Sadie said, waving a half-wrapped wafer bar at us.
We found their old food supplies.
The centuries-old food supplies? I asked.
I don't think so, Ned said. I can't read the labels on these, but there's no way this stuff is that old. We took some to your friends, and they said thank you. They wouldn't have done that if we were offering them 200-year-old food, would they?
I approached, looking at the boxes. I think you're right. That looks like some salvager's food stash. The wafer bars were individually wrapped, and the outer box did bear the date of origin. Looks like they're only 5 years old.
Delicious, Arturo said.
This one is delicious, Sadie said. It has some kind of nuts in it.
She looked at me wide-eyed.
Those aren't poisonous to humans or anything, are they?
I have no idea what humans find poisonous, I said. Though your people used to live among us on Redon and ate our food, so most of it is probably safe to eat. The nuts are called Udal nuts. They grow on bushy plants that live in the crevices of the branches. They're quite good, though I can't vouch for these bars. I pulled one out and unwrapped it. It was more crumbly than usual, probably owing to its age, but at least it hadn't molded.
Maybe we should have been more careful, Sadie said, scowling at her nut wafer as she set it down.
It's all right, Sadie, Ned said. I'm on my third bar. If you die, I'm going with you.
Sadie did not look comforted.
We brought you food, FM said, lifting the case of algae strips, so you don't have to rely on scavenged nut bars.
Oh, custard,
Kimmelin said, taking the jug from Rig.
Thanks.
You also brought more slugs,
Jorgen said, joining Arturo in the doorway.
Why?
It's a long story, FM said.
How long could it be?
Jorgen asked.
You were gone like 10 minutes, tops.
They were only gone for 10 minutes, Sadie said, and we still managed to find the Tanix boxes while they were gone.
She and Catnip, or Teastall, I really needed to figure out which was which, slapped their palms together in what I assumed must be a human gesture of celebration.
Seriously? FM said. You found them that quickly?
It wasn't that hard, Kimmelin said. We found a station map of the platform in that engineering room written in English. The control room was labeled on it.
Shh,
Teastall or Catnip said.
You could have let them think we were amazing.
We are amazing, Sadie said. Amazing at reading maps.
I want to see this,
Rig said. And FM set down the box of algae strips at Sadie's feet and followed Rig and me into the room with Jorgen. The new blue Tanix sat on the control panel and trilled at FM when she walked in.
One wall was dominated by panels and levers and switches, with a wide window above the panel looking over the edge of the platform into the miasma. All around the room, mounted against the walls, were metal boxes like the one in Jorgen's ship.
"Do they all have holo projectors?" FM asked. "Because if so, we could strip those, since we don't need them for the slugs anymore."
Rick knelt down and looked at the wires beneath the panel.
"Looks like it's been looted already. But most of the wiring is intact. The wires themselves must not be worth much on this planet."
"Why would they be?" I asked. "They're wires."
"Depends on whether you have the resources to mine the right metals," Rick said. "Some of those are valuable on Detritus."
That made sense. The core of Redon was rich with metals, which was why the Superiority bothered with us to begin with. They wanted our resources, and we traded them away for the barest recognition of our dignity, instead of remembering we were in the position of power.
"Tanix are valuable too," Jorgen said. "Seriously, where did those come from?"
"We brought them with us," FM said. "Because the Superiority want to take them."
"Did you talk to Cobb?"
Jorgen asked. "No," FM said. "Cobb and Jeshua were talking to the Superiority over the Hypercom. They've already met with the Superiority once, and the Superiority was asking for them to turn over our cytonics and our hyperdrives."
"FM," Jorgen said, "please tell me you didn't steal the Tanix."
"We didn't steal them," FM snapped. "We rescued them. Alanik called to them, and they came of their own free will."
"They're hyperdrives," Jorgen said, "not people. Cobb ordered us to come here, but he didn't ask us to take the slugs that were commissioned to other pilots."
FM narrowed her eyes. "Sometimes you have to do the right thing, Jorgen, even if command says to do something else."
"Okay," Jorgen said in a low voice. "But you were gone a few minutes, FM. You didn't think this through. You didn't talk to Cobb, and for all we know, he has a plan that depends on the hyperdrives. You can't do this."
He looked from Rig to me.
"Why did you help her?"
Rig said. I didn't have any more of an answer. Arturo was watching me, and I wasn't about to admit that having more hyperdrives on Redon seemed like a good idea to me. Arturo wasn't an idiot, and neither was Jorgen. They were probably already putting that together. "It needed to be done," FM said. "Even if they weren't living beings that have feelings."
"The other pilots are human beings," Jorgen said. "And you left them without a tool they could use to survive, FM. Besides, the fact that the slugs let you do this is not good. If they'll respond to Alanik, who they don't know, it means enemy cytonics could use the same tactic against us."
"And clearly we need to train that out of them," FM said.
"But this time it was a good thing, because this is not a good thing," Jorgen said. "Coming here when Cobb gave us sort of orders to do so was one thing. But this is entirely out of the chain of command, and you didn't think it through or consult me before you did it. You could have had Alanik contact me. We could have had a conversation about it."
FM closed her eyes and drew a deep breath.
"You're right, okay? It was rash, but we're not sending them back. Not while your mother is considering taking them to the Superiority. That doesn't even make good tactical sense, Jorgen, and you know it." "But you don't make the tactical decisions," Jorgen said. "You don't know what the bigger plan is."
"The bigger plan may be to give the Tanix to the Superiority," FM said. "I'm not going to let them do that. And if you are, then you are not my flight leader." Rig and Arturo both stared wide-eyed at FM, like she'd said something horrific. FM looked down at the floor, her hands shaking. "I didn't mean that," she said quietly. Jorgen stared at FM, his mouth set in an angry line. Rig and Arturo exchanged a concerned look, and outside the control room, the rest of the flight had fallen silent.
Fine,
Jorgen said, setting his jaw.
We'll keep them here for now. Though I imagine there are going to be a lot of pilots who are not thrilled with us for stealing their Tanix.
We'll return them when the situation is safe, FM said through gritted teeth. Right. Of course they would. They had no intention of sharing with us. I couldn't let the humans leave here with all the slugs. Even one could change everything for Redawn. But they weren't making noise about leaving now, so this wasn't the moment to worry about it. Not when I still had hope they might help me.
Okay, Rig said. If the Tanix are staying, maybe we should figure out how they interface with this platform.
FM looked like she wanted to flee the room, and Jorgen looked like he wanted to punch someone, but they both nodded.
Good idea,
Arturo said.
All right, then, Rig said.
He squeezed FM's shoulder and then moved over to one of the boxes on the wall.
The boxes themselves weren't stripped. Makes sense if the people here don't know the secrets to hyperdrives. We found something weird on that map,
Arturo said.
There was a control room and the auto turret systems, of course, but no engines and no navigation systems. Alanique said this platform used to move, but there doesn't seem to be any way to move it, at least not on the schematics we found.
Interesting,
Rig said.
Maybe it requires a hyperdrive to move? Get me something to stand on so I can get a look above the boxes and see how they're interfaced with the platform.
Everything useful in this room that wasn't screwed down appeared to have been looted, but T-Stall and Catnip hauled in a chunk of metal that was tall enough for Rig to boost himself up. While they did, Kimmelin slipped into the room with us and linked her arm through FM's. She and Jorgen were both still silent. Jorgen leaned against the wall opposite FM with his arms crossed, and FM actively avoided looking at him. It was an improvement over the yelling. The more they fought, the more I worried they'd decide Redawn wasn't worth the trouble. Though if that happened, perhaps I could convince FM to stay and keep the Tanix with her. Jorgen was their Cytonic, so he could influence the slugs to go with him. But as we'd discovered, he wasn't the only one. Rig stared at the debris as Catnip and T-Stall deposited it on the floor.
Is that a piece of a starfighter wing?
Yep,
one of them said.
Is it a piece of one of our starfighter wings?
Rig asked. I had a little trouble with the landing, I said, and the other one snickered. Rig looked at me like he wondered how I was still alive.
We'll tell you all about it later,
Jorgen said.
Right now, we need to know what the Tanix can do if we interface them with the platform.
Rig boosted himself up on the wing, first knocking on the wall and then swinging open a panel to reveal a circuit board.
This all looks like it's intact, Rig said. Either it's not valuable or the salvagers didn't know it was here. The hollow projectors would have been much more recognizable.
Rig climbed down again.
These boxes are labeled underneath, but not in English. Alanique?
I had to lean over the control panel and crane my neck upward to see the labels. They were neither English nor my own language, but Mandarin. This box says it's for the weapons system, I said. But that doesn't make sense, does it? The weapons systems aren't Cytonic. Rig and Jorgen exchanged a look.
The auto turrets aren't,
Arturo said.
But the map had those facilities in another location. Are there Cytonic weapons systems?
Maybe, I said. I've never heard of that. Still, while the writing on the boxes was a bit antiquated, the meaning was clear. The next few boxes were for the comm system. On the opposite wall, I found one with a different label. This one is for the navigation system.
So it does have a hyperdrive,
FM said. Rig nodded.
There's only one spot for a navigation slug, and several for the hypercom. Probably so you could have comm links open with many people at once. It only takes one slug to move the platform.
I examined the boxes along the third wall. These are for the defense systems.
Could be a shield like the one back home,
Rig said.
That would be useful. Though I don't know how that would work, because on Detritus, the platforms combine to become the shield, and the shield mechanism doesn't require a Tanix.
He turned to me.
Do you know how this platform was used in the past? Was it part of a larger system?
I don't know, I said. The Superiority doesn't like us teaching the details of our military history. Rinnakeen taught me some things, but most of our education is limited to being told we were wrong to fight.
You don't believe that, though,
FM said. Why not, if that's what you were taught? Do you believe everything you're told? I asked.
No, FM said. But it's hard for most people to ignore the dominant messaging sometimes, especially when no one is willing to speak against it.
Oh, I said. No, the official curriculum is tailored to make us look good for the Superiority, but there has always been turmoil on Redon as to whose ideas are the best. There is no shortage of differing opinions here.
That must be so confusing,
Rig said. Sometimes, I said, but it's also liberating. With so many different ideas, it's easier to choose what to believe. Unity would like us to all unite under one set of beliefs, one agreement about what is best. But that takes away our knowledge, reduces our ability to decide what's right and what's wrong.
So you need each other's ideas to really be free,
FM said.
I like that idea.
I didn't feel like we needed unity, but maybe that was true. Maybe if independence won, we'd do the same, simplifying what we taught to make us always in the right. Maybe the tension between us was what truly allowed the conversation to happen. If we wanted to maintain that tension, I needed to make sure the independence survived. Jorgen still stood to the side with his arms folded. I couldn't tell what he thought, and I didn't think he'd appreciate being called out in front of the others after his confrontation with FM. You disagree with this idea? I asked in his mind.
No, Jorgen said. But I agree with Rig that it sounds confusing. Let's try the Cytonic defense systems now, Jorgen said to Rig. If we can inhibit the platform or turn on the shield, we'll buy ourselves more time.
Rig nodded and extended his hand to the blue slug, who seemed to sniff it, even though it didn't have a visible nose. After giving the slug a moment to acclimate to him, he picked it up and set it gently into one of the defense systems boxes and closed the door. Nothing happened. What are you supposed to do now? I asked. Ask it to do something?
I don't know what to ask it to do,
Jorgen said.
I can't give it an image of an inhibitor. It doesn't look like anything.
Maybe you could try to show it an image of a cytonic approaching us. Let it know what we're afraid of.
We're not going back to scaring the slugs into submission,
FM said.
Right,
Rig said.
But there's the difference between frightening them and communicating with them. You could, like, explain the situation?
Jorgen looked doubtful, but FM nodded and went back to staring at the floor.
All right, Jorgen said. I'll try to explain.
He closed his eyes, and I listened in the negative realm, trying to hear what he was communicating. There were no words here, only ideas. Jorgen showed the slug his own fear, and then a picture of a cytonic emerging in the control room. I could feel the slug's own fear. It didn't like the way it had been treated by cytonics in the past. By the branches, these things were intelligent. Still, the slug didn't do anything. Can you ask it to protect us? I asked. They said the slugs understood abstract concepts, like danger. Jorgen sent an image, almost like a request. An impression of the platform being shut off to outside cytonics. Arturo's slug made a squeaking noise, and then the universe around me stopped vibrating, as if the whole of it had suddenly died,
It was gone. My ability to reach out, to find the others, to reach the whispering voices that told me I wasn't alone. Maybe that's what Jorgen meant when he said Spensa could hear the stars. It wasn't so much stars I could hear, but all the matter in the whole of space and time. And now they were gone. Jorgen looked as disoriented as I felt. Boomslug had his face buried beneath Jorgen's arm, and Snuggles lay deflated in the sling across his chest. Gil huddled around FM's shoulders.
I can't hear them anymore,
Jorgen said.
It worked, but if we can't use our own powers, we can't keep track of the enemy or listen in on them.
He turned to me.
How did we do that on Detritus? Some kind of impression?
There should be a code that lets us use cytonics while we are within the inhibitor. I don't know how you got it back on Detritus, but you did. Maybe because your powers manifested there, you grew up with the code in your mind?
That would explain how the Tanix got it too,
FM said.
There might be a key here somewhere,
Rig said. He leaned over the control panel.
There are some recordings in the database, but they seem to be blank.
Play them, I said.
Sure,
Rig said, and he fiddled with some of the buttons. The impression pushed into my mind, like a key being slipped under a door. I concentrated on it, committing it to my memory. And the world began to vibrate around me again, like a chorus of insects beginning to chirp again after a windstorm.
Stars,
Jorgen said.
That's better.
Better.
Gil and Boomslug both agreed, their voices forming a strange harmony. I reached out, finding the minds of the slugs farther away on the platform, offering the impression to them, and I could feel each of their relief.
That should give us some cover,
Rig said. I can work on getting the shield up and spend some time fixing Alanique's ship so she's battle ready. Then we can try out the weapons systems and the hyperdrive. All right,
Jorgen said.
That seems like a good plan.
We think we can use the slugs to move the platform, Arturo said. But what will we do with it if we can?
It's a large and powerful tool, I said, but not the stealthiest, to be sure. If we start moving the platform around, Unity will take notice. We need to figure out a way to use the distraction to save Rinnakeen.
We're assuming he wants to be saved,
FM said. She turned to Rig. We want to rescue her friend, but we heard him over the radio saying he was defecting to the other side.
Wonder what that would feel like,
Rig said.
I imagined they felt very similarly, having their commander try to capture them after sending them away. I hoped there was a reasonable explanation. FM looked nervously at Jorgen.
There's more, she said. Cobb sent people after us when we went to get Alanique's ship. They knew we were there, somehow, and Cobb saw us himself. I thought maybe he'd cover for us, but he didn't. He called the people who were with him right to us.
Maybe he did that because he knew we'd escape anyway,
Rig said. He knew Alanique could get us out.
Still, FM said, he could have given us a few more seconds.
He might have noticed you were rescuing Tanix,
Jorgen said.
Yeah, Rig said. That probably didn't help.
He looked down at the instrumentation and he sighed.
As for how we could use the platform, I want to take a look at these other systems and get a better idea of what we're dealing with. Then we can talk about ways we might use it. That will all take some time,
Jorgen said, stepping away to peer out the window into the miasma.
It's getting late. At least, it is on Detritus. What time does night fall here?
I wasn't exactly sure. I looked out the window at the angle of the sun through the miasma. In about 3 sleep cycles, I think.
Interesting,
Rig said.
You sleep multiple times in a day?
Yes, I said. One day is equal to 9 sleep cycles at this time of year on the tree where I live. Sometimes it will be less or more, depending on the location of a given tree in the miasma. I'm not sure what it'll be here, but judging by the angle of the sun, that's my estimation.
So a day here is about a week,
Jorgen said.
We grew up underground, so our days are manufactured as well. Even if it isn't going to get dark, we still need to sleep and eat something that won't kill us.
He looked grudgingly at FM.
Thanks for bringing the algae strips.
It was Alanik's idea, FM said.
It's a good thing Ned gorged himself on those nut bars,
Arturo said.
Might be some algae strips left for the rest of us.
Though I hope he doesn't keel over, Kimmelin added.
I'll get to work,
Rig said.
We can rest and then return to the plan. Sounds good,
Jorgen said. And he stalked out, leaving the rest of us behind. Chapter 16. As Jorgen left the room, FM appeared to deflate. You okay? Kimmelin asked her.
Yeah,
FM said. I really shouldn't have said that to Jorgen.
Definitely not,
Rig said.
But I understand why you did.
I need to walk, FM said. I'll show you that other control room. There might be systems for the shield in there. She and Rig left, heading in the opposite direction as Jorgen, and Kimmelin followed them, telling the rest of the flight that they needed to check in with the Independence pilots and see if they'd found somewhere we could all be comfortable for the night. They wandered off, taking most of the slugs and the food with them. Arturo remained behind. Are they always like this? I asked.
FM and Jorgen? Arturo said. No, not like that.
That wasn't much of a comfort, but as they all seemed committed to seeing this through, I supposed I should leave their internal politics alone. Arturo watched me quietly. I sighed. You still think I'm going to betray you? I asked.
I hope you aren't,
he said. He didn't seem upset about it either way, merely uncertain. You could also betray me, I insisted. You could promise the superiority you'll bring me in. Use me and my people as a bargaining chip to get yourselves a better position, the way Quillan is doing.
We could,
Arturo said. He seemed surprised, like he hadn't thought of that. I hadn't meant to give him any ideas. They'd be heroes, enough that their commanders might forget about their court-martial. Their admiral could claim this was his plan all along. That's what our council would do in such a situation.
But we won't, Arturo said. We've come all this way to secure an alliance. Those are our orders.
They were not orders, as I recalled, but I wasn't going to mention that. Thank you, I said. Arturo nodded, but we both watched each other uneasily. I waited for him to leave, but he kept standing there. Did he not want to leave me alone in this room? Did he think I would sabotage it somehow? You don't have to watch me every minute, I said.
I know,
Arturo said. He seemed surprised again, like the idea hadn't occurred to him.
I was just wondering why you're doing this.
I blinked at him. Trying to rescue my friend?
Fighting the superiority, he said. When you described it back on Detritus, it sounded like your lives are good here.
They are, I said, and I'd like to keep it that way.
So if your people joined the superiority, what do you think would be worse?
I opened my mouth and then closed it again. It was hard for me to imagine exactly what that would be like. Giving in to the superiority felt like the worst thing that could possibly happen, but on the surface, I could see how it would look attractive to the humans after the years of war and terror. I don't think they'd try to exterminate us, I said carefully. If they were going to do that, they would have done it years ago, after we lost the last war.
Okay, Arturo said.
But I think they would oppress us.
And they're not oppressing you now?
Arturo asked. No, they are, I said quickly. They withhold the secrets of hyperdrives from us.
Try to control how we use cytonics. Tell us what aspects of our culture are lesser or advanced.
Do you really want to fight a war with them just because they're critical of you and refuse to share?
It's not that, I said. They actively try to stop us from learning. They tell us that wireless technology is dangerous, that cytonics are dangerous. But they became a powerful civilization by the use of those same resources. By denying us access, it's not only that they won't help us. It's like they walked through the door and then locked it behind them. Arturo nodded.
Still, he said, what do you need that technology for if you want nothing to do with them? Wouldn't that be the only reason you'd need it? To interact with them?
We need it to fight them, I said, because we don't want to be under their control, because we're not lesser. We're intelligent, and we have a right to direct our own lives and our own future. We're not trying to take over from the superiority. We only want to exist without their interference and their judgment. Arturo nodded. I got the feeling he wasn't arguing with me. He was trying to understand.
And that's worth it to you, he said. To risk war. To risk them deciding to exterminate you after all. To risk your life and the lives of everyone you love. The lives of your whole people. To avoid being judged by them.
It's not only that they judge us, I said. It was so hard to define, but I felt the resistance to everything the superiority stood for like it was a part of me. It's that they judge us and find us wanting. And if we cooperate with them, it's like we're admitting they're right, that we are lesser. And we're not. We are equal beings who deserve to be treated as equals. And I would rather risk everything than capitulate, because I can't deny that to myself. It would kill me to do it. Arturo met my eyes and he nodded. I thought maybe he respected that answer. At the very least, he accepted it. What about you? I asked. Why are you here?
I was ordered to be here, he said.
You were not ordered, I said.
Right, but Jorgen is my flight leader and I followed him.
The way I remembered it, the rest of them dragged Jorgen along until he caught up to the idea.
So you disagree then? You don't think you should have come?
Arturo hesitated. Maybe he was worried about expressing disagreement with his superior, but he seemed to have a more familiar relationship with Jorgen. I thought there was more to it. Do you wish you were back on Detritus? I asked, helping your people to broker a peace deal. He was quiet for a moment, staring out the window into the miasma.
No, he admitted. I think we're doing the right thing, helping you.
I nodded. Yes, you are.
Maybe not the smart thing, he said. I worry we've chosen the losing side on both your planet and mine. And I'm afraid that this is going to go terribly wrong for all of us. But I don't like the idea of bargaining with the people who have been murdering us for generations. I don't like the idea of peace talks with the beings who have been keeping us in a cage.
I smiled. He understood then. Giving in to them feels like deciding to die slowly.
I don't know about that, he said. But you're right that it feels like admitting we're lesser. Like we're saying we deserved the way they treated us, and we're willing to simply forgive and forget.
The superiority likes that idea, I said, so long as we are always the ones doing the forgetting. Arturo nodded, staring out at the miasma again. I liked the way he thought about things. The fact that he did think about them, while so many people on both his planet and mine were willing to swallow the easy story without worrying about whether it was a true one. Did you choose to be a pilot? I asked. Your people are at war, but you can't all be fighters.
No, Arturo said. They say we're all part of the war effort, no matter our job. And maybe that's true, in a way. But being a pilot gets you a lot of respect.